Greetings and welcome to Mind Matters News. I'm your real 3D host, Robert J. Marks. I say that I'm your real 3D host because today we're going to be talking about virtual reality. Believe it or not, virtual reality was born in the U.S. military. So was a lot of other technology we enjoy today. This includes things like the internet, self-driving cars, and GPS. And it turns out virtual reality. When I was at the University of Washington in Seattle a few decades back, I worked with the so-called grandfather of virtual reality, a guy named Dr. Tom Furness. Furness was commissioned in the Air Force, and from 1966 to 1989, he developed advanced cockpits for fighter aircraft. Fighter pilots trained in the virtual world created by Tom Furness and his colleagues. Tom Furness did a podcast with me for Mind Matters News a while back covering his role in the development. We're going to provide a link to that podcast in the notes for this show. I also worked with a guy named Dr. Tom Caudill at Boeing when I worked in Seattle. Tom pioneered so-called augmented reality at Boeing, where helpful images are kind of, if you will, superimposed on your field of vision. Imagine at Boeing, for example, an aircraft mechanic working on an aircraft engine. Augmented reality superimposes on his field of vision what should be done and how it should be done. Tom is credited with coining the term augmented reality. Historically, virtual reality has commercially had its ups and downs, it seems to me. Mark Zuckerberg kind of bet the farm, his company, on it when he changed its name from Facebook to Meta. And with the release of Vision Pro, Apple is now dipping its toe in the VR waters. Our guest today to talk about VR and its impact is Doug Smith. Doug is interested in the psychological impact of modern media. Our addiction to screens is addressed in his award-winning book, and here's the title, Unintentional: How Screens Secretly Shape Your Desires and How You Can Break Free. We'll provide a link to that in the podcast notes also. Doug works to help individuals and families break free from screen addiction so they can live out their God-given purpose. He is a senior software engineer with Covenant Eyes. He and his wife, Lainita, are happy empty nesters and are blessed with four grown daughters. And you can find Doug online at his website, thatdougsmith.com. thatdougsmith.com. Doug, welcome.
Thank you so much, Bob. It's such an honor to be with you. I'm a huge fan of all things Mind Matters News, and so it's always awesome to join you and to be able to have this conversation.
Well, that's great. I think that you bring a very important perspective to the stuff we're trying to do, which is the impact of technology on today's world. One of the things you do, before we get into virtual reality, I wanted to talk about Covenant Eyes. You're a senior software engineer with Covenant Eyes, and I'm a little bit familiar with what you do, but could you kind of unpack what Covenant Eyes does before we talk about VR?
Absolutely, yeah. So Covenant Eyes is, I think, the world leader in anti-pornography accountability and filtering software and content. So we've been around 23 plus years. We support platforms Windows, Mac, iOS, and Android, and I am the lead Android engineer for Covenant Eyes. I have been for the last 5 years. And so we work to help people overcome pornography use. And we have all kinds of ways that we do that, that we could talk about at any level of detail you'd like.
So how does it work? I have problems, let's say, I have problems with pornography and I want to address them. How can Covenant Eyes help me?
Yeah. So what we do is we know from our years of research now that the overcoming of pornography use, one of the keys to that is accountability. And so if you knew that someone that you care about is looking over your shoulder at everything you see on your screens, you're very unlikely to look at pornography. And so we have software that we have embedded machine learning algorithms that are running on our platforms that watch the screens that you're using, whatever platform. And if you run across explicit material, we score that in a secure way. We then notify who we call your ally, the person you have chosen to help you overcome pornography. And they will know that you ran across explicit material for whatever reason, and you can then have that conversation. We find that people are supremely helped by the knowledge that that they're not alone, that they're not doing this in secret, which is one of the ways that pornography really thrives, especially in the smartphone era.
It's really kind of spooky stuff, what goes on there. You know, you mentioned that before we get into virtual reality, this is the segue to virtual reality, that a lot of virtual reality pornography is happening now. I was, when you first mentioned that, I was surprised. And then I went to the world of, well, of course, pornography always makes the inroads into technology. So is virtual reality pornography a big problem these days?
Unfortunately, yeah, you're right. I mean, almost any technology we have is going to be exploited by all kinds of different, for all kinds of different nefarious purposes, but pornography is a huge, huge problem. I just read a study that says that pornography is the third most popular content on most virtual reality behind gaming and NFL. So, wow. And that's just, you know, today. And really, VR isn't widely adopted yet. It's definitely going in that direction, especially with Apple dipping its toe in, as you said. But yeah, it's already huge and very disturbing.
So you mentioned number two was NFL, National Football League.
Yeah, that's what they said. Yeah.
What are they doing? Can I watch games in virtual reality now?
Apparently so. I mean, they're doing that with some of the things that I've seen in terms of the 3D and the perspective of the cameras that they're able to shoot. It kind of gives you this perspective of being right there on the field. So you're almost in the position of a coach or even in some cases, you know, they have those flying cameras. I'm not really a sports fan, but I've seen the demos, and it's pretty impressive what they can do.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, that's an experience I have yet to experience. You are interested in the impact of screens on our lives. My parents' screens were at the movie theater. And when I was a kid, my screen was the television set. And I'm old enough to say that my screen as a kid was a black and white television set. Mm-hmm. You know, along comes computers, and now we are just showered with videos and images and advertisements. They're everywhere. I go to a gas station and I pump my gas, and there's this little screen that comes on and it tries to sell me stuff while I'm pumping my gas. I'd like to pump my gas in quiet, but man, everybody's trying to grab my attention and sell me something. So VR looks to be the next step in this screen evolution. You've been looking at Apple's new product. It's called Vision Pro. Before we get into questions about it, could you just tell me what Vision Pro is?
Yeah, absolutely. So, but yeah, I'm right with you there, Bob, in terms of screens. Things have evolved very quickly, and there's a huge percentage of the people who might be listening, and, you know, millennials and Gen Z, who don't know a world without the internet in your pocket, and with especially persuasive design technologies that are really intentionally addictive, especially on the smartphone, that's just, you know, pervasive. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere, right? So, but yeah, Apple Vision Pro builds on that. So Apple describes this as spatial computing. In fact, they say the era of spatial computing is here. They're really banking on the era defining powers they had with the release of the iPhone in 2007. They announced this in June of 2023, and it started shipping in early 2024. So it kind of looks like, if you haven't seen it, kind of looks a little bit like ski goggles. It's made to be very comfortable. It's made to be worn all the time. As an engineer myself, you know, from a technology perspective, it's super impressive. You know, incredible processors, two 4K micro displays, like 12 cameras. It's got 3D photo and video capture, spatial audio, that kind of 3D audio that allows them to, you know, you experience sounds in the visual perspective that you're experiencing it. So it's an amazing technology, as you would expect from Apple. Yeah, it's designed, like I say, it's designed to wear all the time. Work, home, the demos show, you know, watching movies, doing video calls. They even have people doing like spiritual practices and meditation, which we can get into. Yeah, all the things. So it's compelling on the surface, but obviously we wouldn't be talking about it if there weren't other things to consider.
One of the big things that's kept VR from really developing as the big headsets that you have to wear. I'm familiar with the Oculus. I have not seen the Apple product yet, but with the Oculus, you got to put on these big clumsy headsets, and it's a hassle. And I think that VR is going to have to get rid of those clumsy headsets before it develops and is accepted worldwide. What is the Apple situation? Is it a big clumsy headset in a sense?
It is. I mean, it's interesting because Apple has been well known for working really hard to have very good ergonomic user experiences. So I went and did the demo, which we can talk about in detail if you'd like to. There's a lot of adjustments to it to make it. It's still pretty heavy. I imagine, smaller people, might find it, hard on their neck after a little while, but it's got a lot of adjustments to it. It was actually relatively easy for them to configure my glasses prescription so that just worked. Uh-huh. So I don't exactly know all the ways that even happened, but they scanned my glasses and then were able to just put that in there and it worked well. So it is a big headset. It's interesting. One of the things that I talk about in my article is that the way they're marketing it, I use the term propaganda, and again, we can talk about that too, but basically because the way they market it, they've got these young and beautiful, smart people wearing this all the time. It's like wearing ski goggles all the time. It's like, I want to be cool like them. And so among the things they've done, because it's a pass-through video headset, so you don't actually see with your own eyes the real world anymore. Everything comes through their cameras. But they project your eyes on the front of the device. So as you're looking at people who aren't wearing it, they can actually, they're trying to give it the idea that you really are wearing like ski goggles or glasses. So that ultimately they're trying to normalize it and accept that, okay, we probably are going to need big devices like this. But if we make it cool and acceptable and give you enough propaganda, you're going to accept it and want it.
Okay, so they're trying to make it a part of our culture in a way. I mentioned Tom Furness, the so-called godfather of VR. One of the things that he investigated, and I don't think it came into practice, was the idea of wearing glasses with little lasers that actually shined on your eyeballs.
Ooh.
And yeah, it sounds kind of spooky, and I don't know if I would want to wear glasses that shone little lasers on my eyeballs, but it was their idea to do virtual reality through this technology. Hmm. So maybe that's in the future of where virtual reality is going, is shining little lasers on your eyeballs. We'll have to see what happens, because they got to get rid of these headsets. Yeah, they got to do that. So, Doug, why do you care so much about this VR, this Apple Vision Pro? You care so much, you're writing articles about it, and here we are talking on podcasts. What's the deal? Why are you so excited about it?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I think the main thing here is that anything Apple does is significant. The way they're positioning it, they want to define an era. And if they do that, and we don't ask the deeper questions and allow them to define an era, from my research, there's a lot of negative effects that people might not understand. There's this whole idea, this cultural myth of progress. Anything that's new must be good, right? It's because it's new. And when you look at it on the surface, again, technology wise, it's like, wow, this is like, I could wear a theme park ride all the time. What's wrong with that? But most people don't ask the deeper questions. And so what I'm trying to do is help people ask those deeper questions and not ask just can we, but should we?
Okay. I'm not familiar with Apple Vision Pro, and I don't think I will in the near future. I looked it up online, and the retail cost is $3,500.
Right.
I mean, my goodness. So that's the reason you went to the demo instead of purchasing it and trying it out. I mean, that's really expensive. I haven't tried that, but I have tried the Oculus. And it is astonishing. Going on roller coaster rides, for example, mm-hmm. You can be on a roller coaster ride, and I literally have to be sitting down in order to go on a roller coaster ride in virtual reality, because I would lose my balance. There are other cases where I'm walking on a little ledge, and I look down, and it's 50,000 feet down, like in the Grand Canyon. And it's scary. Mm-hmm. And it's incredibly self-absorptive, and you know that you're experiencing that. So in your recent attending of the Vision Pro demo, what did you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. It was surprising how well it worked. As they in their environment, it's an augmented reality experience, and as they call it, spatial computing. So it's designed to work within your environment and kind of project things on top of it. So and they want to make it familiar as well. So one of the early parts of the demo is you kind of place a browser off to your left or your right, and it positions on the certain place in the wall. So as you look, you know, you might look to your left and see your browser. You might look to your right and see a Word document you're typing. In the middle, you might have your photo app, and so it's made to work in that way. But you're placing these windows in those positions, and the user interface that was really quick and easy to learn involves using your eyes basically as the mouse. So you're like looking around at it, and as you move around and look at something, it becomes active, and then your hands are the clicking and dragging. So there's pinching gestures, there's dragging and moving gestures, almost like, you know, Minority Report or Iron Man type of things, you know, you're literally feeling like you're moving things around in space and projecting it. And so it really did feel, especially from the demo standpoint, it was very well kind of this concierge experience of walking you through the high points. I didn't go off the rails because they didn't let me go anywhere. That part, that's a little rough edge, I'm sure, you know, because it's a 1.0 product, right? So there will be rough edges, but it was very impressive.
So I guess the first augmented reality thing that really made inroads was the Pokemon thing. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. Where you run around your camera and you look for little Pokemans all over the place. I got to ask you, in this virtual world where there are virtual keyboards, I think that would be really cool if I had a virtual keyboard and I didn't have to use a physical keyboard. It just tracked my fingers on an augmented reality keyboard.
That would be cool.
I suspect they didn't have that.
They did not have that. At least it was not in the demo. It is designed to be really easy to hook up with a Mac, as you might expect, being Apple, to be able to be like an extended monitor, an additional monitor of like basically any size. It might feel like 100-foot wide monitor. So it's designed to use with like a Mac keyboard. I'm with you. I think they probably will work on that, but that's a really tough problem to solve.
Yeah, I remember on the Oculus when I went to it, you could log into Netflix and you had the virtual reality experience of being at a movie theater.
Exactly. It's that way on Vision Pro too.
Oh, yeah. The screen was enormous. It was still a 2D image, but you felt like you were in a movie theater.
Right.
And I suspect that in the future, they're going to have these more of a 3D virtual reality movies, but that, I don't know if that's going to come out. That seems to be a big step in technology to come out with virtual reality movies like Iron Man or something. 3D is one thing, but to actually put it in a virtual reality world would be something else where you could walk around and look at a scene from different sides.
Right.
So maybe that's in the future. One of the things that you had issue with was Apple's marketing, and all marketing is propaganda, but you especially had issues with Apple's marketing of Vision Pro. Could you address that a little bit?
Yeah, thank you. I do use that word propaganda. It's just to many people, that's a really strong term because it brings to mind oppressive, tyrannical regimes and controlling their population and by controlling their information, that kind of a thing. But in my book, I talk about Edward Bernays, who is the nephew of Sigmund Freud, and kind of he calls himself the father of public relations, but he published a book called Propaganda in the early 20th century, where he lays out in no uncertain terms the process of getting people to do what you want them to do, of basically shaping their desires. And one of his hallmark ways of doing it, just by way of background, was he's famous for this. For being hired by the American Tobacco Company to expand their market by reducing the stigma associated with women smoking. Because back in the 20s, men would smoke, but women just didn't. So what he did was he hired fashion models to march in the 1929 Easter Parade in New York City. And he renamed them, basically rebranded cigarettes as Torches of Freedom. And right. And yeah, so he's okay. Got these fashion models marching in there and made it a news event, basically made it. So it's this normalization. So at a certain point when he knew the news media was going to see this amazing thing, these fashion models marching in the parade, light up their cigarettes, Torches of Freedom. And unfortunately for the world, it worked really well. And, you know, women, almost everybody was smoking before, you know, up into the 70s, and, you know, after the Surgeon General started saying, hey, you know, maybe you might consider not doing that. So anyway, he kind of pioneered the idea of normalizing things to make them acceptable. And so Apple is really singing from his hymn book and in their marketing. Like, as I mentioned earlier, they show people in real life scenarios, sitting on their couch, smiling, wearing the headset. They're at a birthday party, you know, it's, oh, my kids are so cute. Now you can see them. It's just like if you were there. They're working, they're doing face. So FaceTime is new in Vision Pro in that, you know, so you're wearing the headset, but in FaceTime, they do this kind of a AI adjusted vision of yourself, of your face without the headset projected into FaceTime for your viewers, for your, you know, people you're having a conversation with inside the VR space. So they show that, they show people, and then they show this scene of, you know, this woman meditating, kind of a lotus position with this special app that has this really interesting environment, 3D environment of trying to make you feel calm or whatever. So that, all those kinds of things, the normalization of the use of this product without regard for the claims they're making. You know, I bring in kind of 4 points of falseness that I point to in my articles: the idea of false vision, false connection, false control, and even false spirituality. But all of that again is normalized in their advertising. So that's why I really called it out as propaganda, because if we just nod along with it and go, "Wow, I could probably figure out how to get $3,500 for that," you know?
Yep. The same way kids will pay big bucks for tennis shoes these days. It's,
totally. Yeah.
It's just an image thing. I'm old enough to remember when cigarettes were advertised on television, and building on what you said, there was a type of cigarette called Virginia Slims. Mm-hmm. And Virginia Slims used to come out and they were marketing their cigarettes to women. And they would have their slogan as being, "You've come a long way, baby." And they would have this cool-looking modern woman, you know, smoking a cigarette. It had nothing to do with the product itself. One of the things I do is I listen to old radio plays. And it's fun to listen to the old commercials. The old commercials, like for automobiles, used to loud the improvements in the technology. There's a Groucho Marx, You Bet Your Life program. Maybe some people are old enough to remember that, but they advertised DeSoto automobiles, and their big thing was, oh, it's the new power steering. You can actually steer and turn your car with your finger. And it was a big deal, but now it has nothing to do with the technological advances. Automobile advertisements today are just cool people driving around in automobiles. And if you're cool, you're going to ride around in automobiles. And I think this touches on something that you talk about, and that's the idea that the media kind of says you have to try this product or do it this way if you're going to be cool. And the media tells kids especially that everybody is having a good time because they're using their product. And if you don't use their product, you're a loser. Mm-hmm. You have this fear of missing out, if you will. So it is interesting to watch the evolution of commercials. Now, you mentioned these different values, the vision, connection, control, convenience, and even spirituality. Could you dig down on those a little bit more?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I really wanted to help us understand that the promises that they're making are false. Like they're saying things, certain things in their advertisements. And so I wrote an original, the first article before it had come out when it was announced, just based on their advertising and my knowledge of the industry and what they had done in the past. But then I wrote the follow-up after demoing it and really felt confirmed in each one of these points. So for example, the false vision. So this idea that the film that the original ad says, this idea of you see your world and everything in it. You see your world and everything in it, but it's not, you don't actually see your world because everything is projected through their cameras onto these amazing displays. And the problem with that is that by becoming comfortable with that, again, it's designed to wear all the time, the enhancement of what you're seeing and the expectation that you're seeing things that you can, you know, correct the color correction, even just that much could be changed, but you can also change the background of the world you're seeing. It's not the world. It's not the real world. So it's this false vision that you then get used to. So that when you take the headset off, my concerns, the questions I start asking are, is your house not nice enough now? Are the people not attractive enough? Like if you kind of color corrected and, you know, we have filters in Zoom and all that kind of stuff, right? So you can imagine with this kind of displays, the filtering and the who knows what, you don't like the outfit that person's wearing, you just change it, you know, all that kind of stuff. When you take it off, it really can poison your view. And so that's why I call it false vision.
So in some sense, it's almost like a drug.
I really look at it like that. And truly, because it is, because of the addictive nature, and we've talked in, you know, at length, and people are studying the effects of dopamine and how the dopamine cycle, our pleasure cycles in our brain are exploited already by big technology companies who hire the best neuroscientists and behavioral psychologists and make their products do all the things that they know will keep us hooked. You know, Vision Pro takes it up a level by this immersive experience. And so, yeah, everything you see around you is enhanced and false to the point where the real world doesn't really do it for you anymore.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the first point. The second point I talk about is false connection. And so this is the idea that, the quote that from the film says, foundational to Vision Pro is that you're not isolated from other people. Isn't that great?
Right. Yeah, put on some goggles and everybody around you goes away, but now you're connected. Yeah.
Okay. Isn't that amazing? I know. Yeah. So it's this. So again, it's just that kind of a statement, but you say it long enough, you're Apple with billions and billions, trillions of dollars to spend on these, you know, again, these actors and actresses who are wearing this product and they're smiling and they look connected, right?
Right.
Oh, wow.
Right.
But they're not because, yeah, you're right. You have to get used to people wearing this. And if everyone's not wearing it, like, again, one of the ones that there's kind of this really moving idea of a moving video of this sweet little girl and her birthday party. And, but dad's wearing the Vision Pro videoing her birthday party. And it's just like being there, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, but, sure. But the problem is that, yeah, it's just like being there because when you were there, you were wearing the Vision Pro and she's watching, she's looking at her dad with these googly little eyes in front of his ski mask thing. And because again, the other thing that happens there is this, is just what happens when you see someone who's on their phone, right? Oh, I'm listening. Yeah. Really? Because you could have anything up in front of whatever you're looking at, right? But we know that, we feel that disconnection with people. So it's this false connection because yeah, they're watching you, but they also have five other tabs open on their browser. They're thinking about the game. They're doing, you know, whatever they're doing, whatever it is, they're not present. And so everything becomes virtual. It's almost like the Matrix, right? It's this idea of the Matrix is, you're connected, but only with other people who are in the Matrix and the people who are not in the Matrix, you're not really connecting with them. So yeah, it's a sense of false connection.
Okay. What about control?
Okay. So this one is huge. And I really experienced this after the demo. So the prop film, I call it the propaganda film. Their commercial talks about things like you can make the screen as big as you want. You can create the perfect workspace no matter where you are. And this big one, you control how immersed you want to be. So you're in control, especially how immersed you are. And you know, a synonym for immersed is baptized. You know, how deep you wanted to go under, right?
Okay.
And so, you know, you can go there. But so this control, so you're looking around, you're waving your arms, Iron Man-like, Jedi-like, or whatever, and everything responds in your entire world. And again, the blending through the video of the real and the virtual elements of the world, it's well done. And because it's so well done, you get this sense that you are in control and maybe I should be. There's even this, they call it the digital crown, which is this little dial on the top. They already have it on like Apple Watches and things where for 1 minute you might be looking at the environment around you with maybe your browser or your work or your video on top of it, but you can twist that dial and all of a sudden the background is a beautiful landscape. And then maybe the next turn of it is you're on the surface of the moon. And the entire 3D world around you changes to have that. So again, it's this idea of control in the sense that, oh, you don't like what you're looking at. You don't like the way your world is right now. Just turn this dial and it immediately goes away in an immersive sense. And so when this happens over and over again, you become used to having the ability to dismiss things you don't like, to make the world exactly the way you want it. And then the real world is a lot harder to deal with. And so it gives you this false sense of control that is really, really troubling when you look at it from that perspective.
You know, Doug, this kind of reminds me of the escape that we get from different things. I started to watch a movie the other day, Once Upon a Time in America. Don't recommend it. It's a terrible movie. But Robert De Niro goes to an opium den. And the reason he goes to this opium den is that he wants to escape reality. And he just sits there and, and he zones out. It's the same thing with drugs, same thing with alcoholism. It takes you away from reality and the discomforts that you suffer in life. And you just don't like these discomforts. You got to get away from them. It seems that this virtual reality is doing the same sort of thing, or screens in general are doing the same sort of things, kind of letting you escape from reality. And I guess for small doses, that's okay, but it can be overdone.
That's exactly right, Bob. We are already seeing that with the screens. You know, when the average person spends 8+ hours a day consuming digital media, whether that's on their smartphone, through social media, video games, streaming video, those are forms of escape. And then added to that, again, the persuasive design, the elements that cause us to want to, so that we can't even be bored anymore, right? So we can't be 5 seconds standing in line without thinking, oh, what's on Twitter? But Twitter designed it to do that. Exactly. You know, they want to be top of mind. They built in these habit forming hooks and loops and triggers to want to do that to us, so that, you know, we're doing that. That's why I call my book Unintentional, because most of us don't mean to spend 8 hours a day, the equivalent of like over a full time job, consuming these products. So Apple takes it up a notch with the Vision Pro, and VR does in general, but Apple's, you know, made it slick and consumable and do it all the time, to the point where, yeah, we will live in this escaped reality. And one thing I didn't mention in terms of control, the $3,500 price tag, as you mentioned, it's not affordable for most people. So who's going to buy it? It's going to be elite people who can afford it. So then you start having this situation where an elite group of people think that they already have a lot of control, because they already have a lot of money, right? So then they've got this false sense of control by wearing this device, and you've got this even more of a division of people who are kind of in this certain bracket or whatever, the certain kind of socioeconomic expectation, that are controlling their virtual world. And so that is their world. And so then when they engage the real world with the rest of us, who are almost, there's a study that I quoted in the later article, that where there's this uncanny valley where other people are almost unhuman when they take the device off. So this division that it's creating, or will create as it becomes more adopted, is a significant concern to me.
Wow. Interesting. Doug, we're running out of time. So let's continue our talk in a subsequent chat. And this has been great. I want to ask you about spirituality and a number of other things concerning your work, especially what some older writers have talked about and prophesized about the impact of technology on our lives today. We've been talking to Doug Smith about the new Apple Vision Pro VR set. And as you can hear here, Doug is a passionate voice in the epic battle against screen addiction. You should check out his book. The title of the book is Unintentional: How Screens Secretly Shape Your Desires and How You Can Break Free. And there's a website for that. It's called unintentionalbook.com. unintentionalbook.com. And you can follow Doug at thatdougsmith.com. So until next time on Mind Matters News, be of good cheer.
This has been Mind Matters News with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters News is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters News is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.